This week on the Nittany Dispatch, we discuss Matt Zoller's committing to Missouri, Penn State's transfers talking to the media for the first time since joining the program, and Drew Aller speaking to the media for the first time this spring. This week on the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome to the Nittany Dispatch. I'm John Sauber of the Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. And Audrey, it is April 4th. The Phillies are doing the thing that they always do in the early season, and frankly, it's not any fun.
How'd the opening series go, John? How was it?
Listen, as they always say in baseball, those important games are the ones in late March, not the ones in mid-October.
You know what? I was arguing with John on Saturday. Yeah, Saturday I was texting him mad about a really horrendous baseball call, which should have been a called strike three. Instead, it was called a ball, which is a really terrible, terrible call. And that's what John's response was. He's like, oh, you're complaining about balls and strikes in March. And I'm like, it all matters. It all matters.
You know, it's a real shame that the Braves only won that game 11-4 instead of 11-1. That was a real difference maker there. What's funny is, I think it was last night too, Nick Castellanos is up with a full count, and it was a very similar pitch location, and it was once again called ball four. I was like, I don't understand how this is happening.
Where we need the robot umps, John. We need the robot umps. Or honestly, like replay.
You don't have to tell me twice.
To me, that's the perfect case for replay, right? But we just are all celebrating that like the games finally got faster the last couple of years. Yes. So like, do we really want that?
So hear me out. This is my solution to what is becoming a baseball podcast.
We're open to everything around here.
You do the ABS automatic balls and strikes system, but you don't actually use it on every pitch. Each team gets 5 challenges per game. 5 might seem like a lot, but when the challenge is literally point at the umpire, the response is instant because ABS has already been working the whole time. You get right back into the flow. You know what I mean? You don't have to worry about like going to the booth, looking at it. You have an immediate reaction. I think some people might say 5 challenges is too many. I would implore you to watch a game umpired by Angel Hernandez and tell me that 5 is even enough, quite frankly. But I think like that is the simple solution, yeah. Right? You get the human element that people want. And on some level that I still want too. But you also get like, hey, when it matters in these really important situations deemed by the team who is on what they perceive to be the wrong end.
Or what I think is an important situation in March.
You can use that challenge on March 28th if you want to, when no one really cares, except for Audrey.
Except for me. Cares. And there is and, something.
By the way, go ahead. I say this. I watch every single Phillies game. I've watched every pitch of every Phillies game so far this year, which is why I'm so upset all the time.
Yeah, that's very much looking forward to Braves Diamondbacks on Friday, which obviously going to be a great basketball weekend too, John. Rolling into championship on Monday. That's been really fun to watch. Women's tournament has been tremendous.
It's been fantastic.
Caitlin Clark's on TV. I'm going to watch. Like there's no debating it. No questions about it.
I was a little bummed out that Juju Watkins getting bounced from USC.
She's so fun to watch. Yeah.
Yep.
No, it's a great, like March is just the awesome sporting month. And now we're at the tail end of it as we get into early April. And I got to admit, John, the football this spring has been like pretty level around here. Like not many crazy storylines. It's been a boring spring. I'm going to go ahead and say it. As soon as I say it, there's something will happen, but it's been a boring spring. And if Penn State fans were hoping for a jolt on the recruiting trail today, as we record this on Thursday, they didn't get it. As quarterback Matt Zollers, who had Penn State among his finalists, along with Georgia, along with Missouri, along with Pitt, announced he is going to Missouri.
Yeah, and listen, if we're going to try and psychoanalyze the decision, I get it. Right. Like Eli Drinkwitz is a fantastic offensive mind. Mm-hmm. They run a lot of good stuff at Missouri, as we saw. I'm not gonna lie. Every chance I could, I was watching Luther Burden at wide receiver for Missouri last year and Schrader at running back. Like they run a wide open offense where they sling it. Like it is, if I were a high school kid, I would find that appealing. Now, I also think Penn State is about to evolve into a very exciting offense too. The downside is that track record doesn't exist at Penn State right now. Right. And I'm not, by the way, I am not informed on why Matt Zoller's made his decision to be clear, this is not me reporting anything. This is based on how I view the situation in general. I like Penn State hasn't, you don't have the film of the Andy Kotelnicki offense at Penn State.
Coach K.
Yeah, of Andy Kotelnicki's offense at Penn State. I'll die on this hill gladly. Even though everyone is continually making
all
sure
the
that
players
I actually,
this spring, everyone yes. talked. Yeah, Coach K's offense could. It's stuck. It's here to stay.
If you watch, mm-hmm. if you are on one of these Zoom calls and you're on the gallery view and you see someone say Coach K and you then look at me, you will immediately see me just put my head down and shake my head every single time. But just not having that film, I think probably would make me not want to go there as much, right? Like, I think it would be like, okay, well, I don't know what it looks like. I'm not saying that came into play here, but well, I would understand if it did.
Here's the other thing, John. The Penn State track record of getting guys quarterbacks to the NFL is not good. That's been the kind of the big bugaboo, the streak buster that Drew Aller has to kind of overcome. It's bizarre. It doesn't make sense when you examine a lot of it. But for me, where this hurts Penn State, because again, this is going to be a two quarterback class when it's all said and done. They have Beckham, Kritza. They're planning for this still to be a two quarterback class. And that's fine. But now, like, how they get that second guy is going to be interesting in the next few months. But for me, the interesting thing is you have, again, an elite prospect in Pennsylvania who's going elsewhere despite visiting Penn State more than every other school. I think, though, where fans shouldn't get too caught up in this is the fact that Zollers didn't grow up a Penn State fan. Like, when I talked to him on the phone this winter, I was kind of doing the deep dive background check of who did you grow up rooting for, watching. I believe his mom, it was, actually went to Ohio State. So, like, did not grow up on Penn State. Wasn't like he's somebody who came here coming to games. So I think that makes that a little bit different. I think that levels the playing field. Now, I think the big... I wouldn't even say elephant in the room because it's 2024. This is the thing is NIL, right? And what did Penn State offer? What did other schools offer? I don't know. Like, I will not say with certainty that that is why or why it did not happen. But that is part of the equation for most decisions, not every decision, but for most decisions these days. So of course you got to kind of take that into account or take for that, which you want. But I think also if you're Matt Zollers, maybe, again, you're an ultra-competitive guy, Pennsylvania guy. Maybe in the back of your head you're thinking, well, last summer my only offer was from Old Dominion. And I remember talking with Matt's private trainer this winter, and one of the things he told me was the trainer actually had to do quite a bit of lobbying with the Elite 11 Regional to even let Matt compete because they were kind of, they had their list set. He's, you know, at that point, rising junior, so they didn't want to let him in. And the trainer was banging the drum and was like, this guy's really good. You got to trust me. So the day before he got approved to go to the Elite 11 Regional in State College, came up here. That's where he threw it. That's where he tested really, really high on the athletic testing rating, which was important because Ethan Grunkemeyer was also there. Like, that was a pretty, pretty solid regional that they had here. So that opened some eyes. You know, then he goes, he does the 7-on-7 camp at Penn State. Old Dominion offers, Penn State's like, we like you, but we still want to see a little bit more. So, you know, but that's kind of how this kid's recruitment played out. And everything took off this January. I do think, just from like a national recruiting perspective, the interesting next domino now here comes with Georgia, who was in the running for Matt. Now, is this like, for me, if you're Georgia, I think at this point you go all in on Juju Lewis and say, this is it. This is our guy. This is what we got to do. So Penn State, of course, isn't in that situation. It's completely different here. I don't know if you caught any of this, John, but some of the fan reaction after the commitment was, oh, well, we'll just get him in a couple years when he's in the transfer portal anyway. Well, doesn't always work like that, but it is good to have a previous relationship, but I wouldn't be banking on that.
Yeah. And here's the thing, like, maybe I'm too high on Ethan Grunkemeyer, but I think Penn State's probably going to be fine whenever Grunkemeyer, or if Grunkemeyer ends up being the successor to Aller, right? Or whatever the plan is when Drew Aller, is done at Penn State. Like, I think that they're in good hands. I'm very high on Ethan Grunkemeyer. I think there is reason to believe that, let's say it doesn't work out with him or Bo Prabula or Jackson Smolik, that, you know, the portal is an option. We see it all the time, every offseason. That's why I recruiting to me, like when someone says recruiting, if they said it the word 5 years ago, my mind went to high school recruiting. Now it goes more to portal recruiting. Portal. Yep. Penn State does not do it as heavily as everyone else. I will be curious to see how much that changes over the next few years, if it does at all. If it becomes, you know, if it goes from like five guys that they get that are contributors to maybe 10, or maybe it's like six or seven, but like, hey, one's a quarterback and one is like a, you know, the cornerstone left tackle or what have you, right? Like, are they going heavier in on the elite of the elite? Because while they've added really good players in the transfer portal, there's no denying that. Like, I think, you know what I mean? Arnold Ebiketie is a great example of someone that they added that really blew up at Penn State. Chop Robinson, obviously. Yeah. Like there are a number of guys. I think Julian Fleming is going to be like that. I think AJ Harris and Jalen Kimber like are going to be like really heavy contributors and important pieces, but they haven't gone and gotten the guy that at the time of their portal entry was the guy,
big time guy,
you know what I mean? Yeah, they haven't gone and gotten Caleb Downs, you know, or anyone like that, or even they obviously haven't gone to the portal for quarterbacks. So I am curious to see if and when that shifts, right? When it becomes, okay, we like it to supplement our roster, but how about go get this spot that maybe, you know, maybe there's a class where they just don't hit on any wide receivers and suddenly they go get someone that was, you know, playing at, I don't know, an ACC school that the disparity between ACC and Big Ten is, I think, is growing quite a bit. They want to move up to the Big Ten. They were number one there. Now suddenly they're number one at Penn State, whatever. Like I'm curious to see if that shift ever happens, because it's one that they haven't made yet. And you're seeing most of the best programs are kind of big fish or going big game hunting, I should say, to fish out these guys.
Especially with quarterbacks. Like, to me, that is right. That's a really interesting point, because most important position on the field. Often, you know, Penn State's philosophy has been, we want high school guys. We want them here. We want them bought into the program. We want to develop them our way. But in this day and age, right, you have to evolve. And I think they've done a nice job for the most part with that. I mean, I think you look at the secondary, certainly stacked. They've hit on really good guys that they've brought in. And they always say, you know, culturally, they want that fit too. That's what James Franklin always hits on.
Been good for them in the pass rush too. So like, that's obviously an important spot. Like I said, chopping.
Yeah. I mean, they've gotten productive guys, but yeah, the quarterback position is something that maybe we see a shift there in the coming years. Maybe we don't. I mean, we'll see. But yeah, I do think especially it stings a bit for sure if you're Penn State, just because you had Zollers on campus so many times. But this also is not like the world is burning, widespread.
It's not the end of the world.
Like, it's one of those things that happens. Like, he's good. Yeah. It's a recruitment that blew up this winter. Fast rising prospect, which kind of aligns a lot with Smolik, with Grunkemeyer, the way even Aller a little bit, the way their recruitments kind of started. But yeah, you would love to have him for sure, but you didn't. And so now you got to kind of figure out where you go from here, which is going to be interesting to see. But John, which is really kind of interesting that the Pennsylvania guy leaves this week when otherwise right. So much of this show would have been about the Pennsylvania guys and Jalen Kimber, who we heard from for the first time this week in Julian Fleming and Nolan Rucci. Penn State's transfers spoke with the media Tuesday night after practice. It was a late Tuesday night, John. It was like pushing 8 o'clock or after eight by the time they spoke. It was after practice. I
mean, what else is new?
I was working through a few yawns, but we powered through for our readers and our listeners to kind of ask
had to go
questions.
Home and
had to go home and write.
Embiid's return. Oh, yeah, sure.
Right, and watch Joel Embiid's return while writing. Yeah, there's something about filing a story at like 11 p.m. in, you know, April when you're like, this shouldn't be happening. But the transfers are talking, so we're working.
Right.
Julian Fleming, right, the much-anticipated Pennsylvania guy, you know, from Southern Columbia, finally gets here. He's in a Penn State practice gear. I thought, John, that the most interesting thing Julian Fleming said was that he was 50-50 on whether or not he was going to go to the NFL or he was going to enter the transfer portal. I found that to be a really interesting thing, because obviously you look at his career, it hasn't gone the way that anyone would have projected for the top receiver in the country in his class, a five-star prospect. But again, all it takes is one team. So I thought that was a really interesting omission. But the big thing for Fleming, the biggest thing, is that he's healthy for the first time. And heading into the last week of spring ball, he's on track, knock on wood, to make it through completely healthy.
Yeah. And, you know, this is something both you and I wrote about, right? You can, especially the 50-50 thing on the draft. Of course, you can find Audrey's writing for that at The Athletic. You can find mine at centerdaily.com. Before we get too far, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Those 5-star ratings are helpful. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the like button down below and subscribe as well. But no, I think just to touch on the 50-50 thing real quick, I'm sure some people would be skeptical of that. Like, oh, why would this be the case? Julian Fleming, I believe, is 23. Like, right. Like that becomes a knock on you as you get older going into the draft. Would not have blamed him one bit had he entered the 2024 NFL draft. Instead, though, to Penn State's benefit, he decides to give it one more go in college. I think the biggest thing, like he said, and like you just said, is staying healthy. If he can stay healthy, there's reason to believe he can be a 1,000-yard receiver at Penn State, right? Like, I think he is that level of talented player. I think he's going to be I think he has a strong chance of separating himself as the top option in this offense. And it could pay off swimmingly, right? I don't know that because at that time, I believe it'd be 24 for next year's draft. I don't know that that turns into a first or second round pick, but maybe he's a third or fourth round pick instead of, you know, a late round UDFA type guy. And he does all the stuff that everyone has said all spring that NFL teams will love just as much as college coaches love: the blocking, the leadership. And it just unfortunately comes down to health, and there's some randomness there. And, you know, some of it's soft tissue stuff, which you never like to see because it feels like that stuff is reoccurring more. Although,
well, he had the weird, as you'll note from thing.
But as you'll note from the no degrees on the wall behind me, I am not a doctor and have no PhD, so I'm not going
John
to pretend.
Saber, MD.
That's right.
Yeah, no, but and that was the thing. Fleming even said, he's like, my shoulders are both good. And that was, I was reading up on it from coverage when he was at Ohio State. He had frequent dislocations in his shoulders, so he had procedures done then, which is pretty wild when you're a wide receiver. Was kind of the thing.
This was a thing, and I feel comfortable saying this. We're enough removed from it.
This
was a thing for a guy that was a big time player for Penn State a couple years ago, too, right? And
that's
and
a very big descriptor, John. Would you like to share any more detail?
A second.
For what sport? Football, basketball, wrestling.
Jaquan Brisker was like having those issues,
he had
right?
Bionic
like
we shoulders, would
see,
yeah.
Yeah, like you would see it happened in the Wisconsin game. It happened in the Iowa game. Trying to think of when else you would see him like make these hits and then he would go down. And that's, I think, one of the reasons that people in Iowa thought Penn State was like faking injuries to slow the pace of the slowest game in the planet, which is another topic for another day. But I like that happens, right? Especially in that position. Not a doctor. Don't fully understand if it happens more when you're making a hit like Brisker was, or if you're taking one when Fleming is. Like, I don't know, but something definitely to keep an eye on because it can happen frequently, right? Like it can be something that, you know, you mentioned getting it surgically repaired. I would think that would maybe quell some of the concern, but again,
It's been good since then, since the repairs. So that was kind of the thing, was looking back like at his medical history, him getting healthy, because he even said it himself. He said, you know, the old adage, best ability is availability. And he's kind of taken that to heart because that has, he said it, John, I'm not making this up.
I know you want to hear me go on a rant. It's that's actually not true. I'm available. I am not better than anyone on the Penn State roster. So, you know,
facts. But I the other thing that I was hoping he'd provide more details on, and he didn't, but I kept kind of prying because that's what we do. When he came here, he met with Drew Aller on his visit before he committed, and said that Drew, Coach K, and Julian, they all got together. There's that scowl. They all got together and watched, you know, kind of some film and looked at, talked about some schemes and the play style. And Julian said that Drew said to him, like, hey, this is what I see you being for the offense. This is what I envision your role being. And I followed it up and said, well, what did he tell you, right? Like, what was that? And he's like, just wait till the fall. So we're in a holding pattern. We're waiting till the fall. But yeah, it was nice to hear from him just because there has been so much interest. His family has been up at practices. His grandpa's been up at practices, which obviously he said, hey, the 6-hour drive to Columbus, it's now been cut down to 1 hour and 20 minutes. But he did say, he goes, I went from living in a big city to a college town, right? And that was kind of one of the things that he, I guess, wasn't maybe so sure about initially. But he's here, and he's going to be here for the season and the year. So it is what it is. The weather's getting slightly better out there, so it'll get nicer around here soon enough. It'll get more lively.
Speak for yourself. It was hailing today at my house.
And sunny on my side of town.
I know it was not even raining. And then all of a sudden it started hailing and my dog started freaking out. I started freaking out because I assumed it was like, we're about to deal with a tornado. That's what this usually leads to. But no, I think like the Drew having an ideal, you know, version of Julian Fleming is not all that surprising, whatever that role may be. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about this more as the offseason rolls on, as you and I get into previewing the season, but I think Julian's going to have a pretty big role in this offense, and as he should. And I think he'll probably have a pretty big role in the running game, like, because he's, I would guarantee, their best blocking wide receiver. Yeah. Like, this is, and that's important because I would guess that they're going to be a run heavy team based on what I've seen out of Andy Kotelnicki's offenses in years past. So I think that Fleming is going to be important. I think the production will end up matching, having that kind of thought about what he's going to do. But I think even if it doesn't, that he's going to play a really big role for this team because, you know, you mentioned the availability. That's been an issue for Harrison Wallace III too.
I was going to say, that's been a bit of a theme for the receiving core, yeah.
Yeah, it's been in and out. Keandre Lambert,
Mari Evans last year was missing.
I think we can probably, and I think we can ascribe some of Amari Evans' other absences to other stuff. And, you know, we saw him come on at the end of the year after Mike Yurcich was fired. And I will just leave those two sentences there, not connected whatsoever. But I do think like that Keandre Lambert-Smith's lack of on-field consistency is it's obviously not the same as being injured. I'm not like, that's kind of crazy, but like some of the same outcomes end up occurring, right? Because maybe you have the guy available, but you can't rely on the production, right? Which is the problem with an injury is you can't rely on the production.
How many times last year did we hear from James Franklin that this was a different offense with Harrison Wallace in it than it, you know? Yep. Now, granted, we're getting a different offense regardless this year for many reasons. But I do want to put this out there because a lot of times we'll get people who ask us in the spring, well, how do they look? Who's impressing in scrimmages and this and that? Like, the first full practice that we will see will be the blue-white game next Saturday, April
13th.
Like everyone else. Like, that's, we go in, we see 10 to 15 minutes of drill work. It is what it is. It's more so just kind of taking count of who's here, who's not, maybe getting some
movement stuff.
Yeah, some movement stuff. You can hear how loud Andy Kotelnicki is, yes. Kind of enthusiastic. You can hear and see that Tom Allen has that previous head coaching experience. And James Franklin even said it last week. Tom Allen keeps blowing his whistle when he's not supposed to blow his whistle. But he's doing it because he's, you know, he's a head coach still at heart. So you get those scenes. But in terms of people saying, well, how's this guy looked? And you know, how's that guy? We will see April 13th like the rest of you. So most of what we're gauging this spring is things that you're hearing and little scenes maybe that you're observing in practices. But yeah, I do think there are some obvious things that stand out when you talk to these players, right? Like Fleming. You talk to him, you can tell right away you are talking to a grown adult, right? This is, you mentioned the age thing. This is someone who's older, physically more mature. You can see that by the way he talks, but also massive biceps with two good bionic shoulders now. Nolan Rucci spoke Tuesday night as well. 6'8", he's now 315 pounds. He said when he enrolled in January, he was 300 pounds, and he would like to get to 320 by the season. What I found to be most interesting about that is that we knew that they were going to try to work him on the right side at right tackle. We know that Drew Shelton's not available this spring. That's been out there since before spring ball even started. So there, to me, you've got your left tackle of the future. You got Rucci working at right tackle with Anthony Donko. There's going to be a competition there. But Rucci did say that he has worked both left and right tackle a little bit this spring. So to me, that right tackle competition is going to be something that we're all going to be keeping an eye on as it gets closer to the season. But nothing's getting decided in April, right? James Franklin has made that abundantly clear across the board with every position this year, which he's always going to say that even for spots where it's a little more obvious, right? Like he said it once. Well, he said it once with Saquon Barkley too, and it was like, really? But that's kind of his thing. I get it. Every spot's up for grabs, right? That's kind of the coaching motivator in him. But yeah, I think it's, you know, again, you talk about full circle moments about players coming home. Nolan Rucci's going home on the weekends, right? Occasionally. So he was watching film with his dad, Penn State Letterman, Todd Rucci. So again, that's not stuff that was happening when he was at Wisconsin.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the maturity. Jalen Kimber very much like knows what this life is and what it's about. You know what I mean? Like, there's a maturity to his approach, to the way he spoke to us. You know,
he even is said, I think, like, I've played a lot of football. Like, I'm here to help the younger guys. Yeah.
And he hasn't been, maybe I'm misremembering or not remembering, but I don't think he's been someone that's been mentioned as a leader, but like the way he spoke, like it was like very clear that he's like one of the leaders in the cornerback room.
I think Jalen Reed might've shouted him out. If I'm recalling correctly the previous week.
But he talked about like when a guy makes a mistake, you pull him to the side. You know what I mean? Let him know like what he saw, what can help him, why it can help him.
Not me. When John makes a mistake on the podcast, I just berate him on air. That's usually how we do these things.
That's right. I just get shouted down. But no, I think that is really important for a really young room, because the other guy brought in, AJ Harris, is also young. You know, he said that's Kimber said that someone he's kind of gravitated to. They were both in Georgia. It makes sense. They're both coming in this semester. But I would not be surprised. I'm not penciling in anyone as a starter at any position.
Oh, when has this ever stopped you, John? Come on.
Right. But like, it seems like Kimber's probably going to start, right? Like, it feels like
that's, I would think so.
That's going to end up being the case. He said he's been working mostly on the outside, so I don't expect that to be in the slot, by the way. You know, you mentioned Jalen Reed. Tom Allen kind of indicated that seems to be the guy right now at that Lions spot. Used to be called the Husky when Allen was at Indiana. Used to be the star here. Used to be, it's just the nickel position. It's either a big nickel, which is a safety type, or a normal nickel corner, which is like a more of a corner type. Reed would obviously make you think that's a bigger position, which makes sense given what Allen's done in the past there. But he mentioned, Reed was the first guy I mentioned and said he's been getting a lot of work there, which I think is probably not all that surprising given that Zaki Wheatley and KJ Winston are both. KJ Winston, I think, is a chance to be all-conference first team this year, like potential all-American level safety. Mm-hmm. Zaki Wheatley, I think, is a good starter and potentially could be an all-conference level guy too, if he can kind of put it all together, which we've seen. You know, everyone has these great off seasons. He's good in the regular season, but it's the consistency is a bit lacking there at times. So I think that secondary starting to take shape, you know, okay, two starting safeties or the three starting safeties, I guess, are those guys, probably Kimber on the outside. I would guess Kim Miller outside on the other one.
Kim Miller, that would kind of be my read, but I think James Franklin.
I think they're going to rotate a lot no matter what, though.
I think we're going to see a lot of nickel this season, and I do think we'll see a lot of rotations. What James Franklin said about AJ Harris, I found interesting too this week. He said that, you know, he's a really strong corner and that he's had a nice spring. We haven't heard from AJ Harris yet. We're hoping to hear from him at some point this spring. But to me, like, he's one of those players that, again, you look back at the recruiting pedigree, just because it's not that long ago, he's only a sophomore. This could be a guy that, when it's all said and done, we're talking about him in the same conversation as Chop Robinson, as Arnold Ebiketie, as one of those premier, really, really big time transfer players that you brought in. So a little bit different just because he's only a sophomore. But he's someone that, when you talk about what do I want to see, we'll get into this on the show next week, but what do I want to see leading into the Blue-White game? I want to see a lot of those cornerbacks. And I think too, there's a level of Jalen Kimber where if you're James Franklin, you kind of manage the veterans, right? Like, you don't need Jalen Kimber to be out there a ton this spring, but it's important to get him some reps for leadership perspective, all that.
Same with Jalen Reed.
Yeah, you've got load management stuff going on here, and we always see that in the spring game. So there is kind of that to take into account. But while I'm thinking of spring game and people we see and won't see, there was one injury to report this spring. On3 reported that quarterback Jackson Smolik sustained what they described as a significant injury. So Penn State, have they officially confirmed? I don't think they have.
No, I don't believe so.
It's April 2, so it's... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say the closest thing we got to confirmation was the Wednesday prior to that reporting when James Franklin
wasn't on the practice field.
Yeah, when he wasn't on the practice field, and he also wasn't this past Wednesday or Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday. We do it on Tuesdays. Yeah, Tuesday, yeah. I'm used to Wednesday regular.
It is. It's thrown me off the rest of the week. Yeah. Yes.
I've said that a lot every week, too, even my editor. But James Franklin was asked about the young quarterbacks, how they're doing, talked about Drew, talked about Bo, talked about Ethan Grunkmeyer. I think he even might have mentioned Carson Kieswetter. I don't remember.
No, he focused on, he was asked about the young quarterbacks, and he just answered about Grunkmeyer. And No mention of Smolik. And to me, that's, again, you'd round this program enough. That's the red flag. Okay, something's going on. He's, you know, he's not available. So, yeah. So
there's been some scuttlebutt that something was there anyways, but
if you're looking to see Jackson Smolik in the blue-white game, don't bank on it. Don't expect it, right? That's what we're
saying. Good opportunity for Grunkmeyer, though. You know what I mean? Like, I would think that he's going to get a lot of the reps. We don't know what it's going to look like. Like James has said, he wants it to be like a more of a game-like thing. How does that actually manifest? Who knows? But like you said, the cornerbacks, I think, going to be worth watching. The wide receivers going to be worth watching. I'm guessing you and I will be back here next week discussing exactly what we're looking for in the blue-white game.
Oh, for sure. Sure. But we can't give away the rest of the show, John. We can't.
Right.
Can't give away the rest of the future show. But yeah, no, I think the other, I just did want to mention this because I thought when you said we're going to be back there, I thought maybe you were going to get into punt returners, and that will not be us. We will never be returning punts in any forum. But James Franklin was asked how much, because again, the specialists on this team, this is a storyline. Like, this is an interesting offseason with the specialists, obviously, of the new coordinator and Justin Lustig. But you can't do a whole heck of a lot, especially when you're in Haluba Hall, with your specialists this spring. But Caden Saunders is the primary punt returner. Lustig said as much this week. That was been the expectation. We saw it a little bit last year before the Daquan Hardy emergence. So I just did want to pass that along because I'm sure we'll get some looks at the specialists next week as well. Anything else, John, that you want to pump that you're working on? Because I got a piece I want to pump. If you have anything else you got that you're looking forward to working on.
One other note from Jalen Kimber. I asked him because he put in his post when he was transferring that he had one year left and that this was like for his final year of eligibility. So I said, like, that set in stone, like, because you have 2 years left. And he was smiling. He's like, I mean, if I got to come back, I got to come back. He's like, but the plan is essentially to move on, right? That he wants to, the exact quote was that, you know, really, I just want to go out there and show people that I can play football. I'm just really ready to go and prove people wrong. Honestly, that's just that simple. He seems very motivated. He seems very hell-bent on making this his last year because of how well he plans on playing. And, you know, good for him. I think he has a chance to do that. Like, this is going to put him on the stage to do it. He's athletically, I think he's got the traits. I think if Terry Smith can kind of round out some of those edges, that they have a chance to have a really good corner on their hands in Kimber, who I probably downplayed him too much when he first got to Penn State. This won't surprise anyone. I've been watching a bunch of Florida games recently, trying to get a good gauge of who he is. But yeah, I think that's an important note too, that if it doesn't go well this year, that he'll come back, you know, like that. It's not set in stone were the words he used, that he would be moving on no matter what after this year.
I just appreciate, John, that now that we have clarification on Riley Thompson's eligibility, that now you found someone else to nitpick their availability.
He said it.
I appreciate it. No, because that was one of the things when he posted it. I remember looking at it, and then we're all doing the math in our heads because of the COVID year. It didn't count for anyone, but every school seemingly lists it a little bit differently.
Do you know how long I sat in front of his player profile at Florida on my laptop?
Probably way too
counting long. The years over and over again. Like, okay, this one counts. This one doesn't. This one
doesn't.
Count. Does this one count? This one might count. Hold on, let me count these, and then eventually came to the conclusion.
I mean, yes, he has 2 years. And he's on his third school, right? So that's the other thing that kind of makes it interesting. But he did touch on the fact that he had a previous relationship with Terry Smith. That his first time around getting recruited out of high school, Terry had recruited him. So, which we can do the math. So he told Penn State no once. Then when he went in the transfer portal again before going to Florida, Terry Smith had reached out. He told Penn State no twice. And then this time around, goes in the portal, Terry Smith reaches out, and he told Penn State yes. So the third time is the charm for Terry Smith and Jalen Kimber. But your point is a good one, too, of he doesn't sound like somebody who's here to wait. I go back to what Terry Smith said back at I guess it was back in the winter when they acknowledged all the signings or right around them. James Franklin had touched on it too. Like, if you're transferring in like a big time premier player like them or coming from an SEC program, you're not coming here to sit. You're coming here for a reason. And I think these guys that we heard from this week, they all made it very clear that they're here. They're here to push for starting spots. They're here to make a difference. But because you've opened up the eligibility Pandora's box, I'm working on a story I hope to should be out hopefully soon in the next few days or so on The Athletic on wrestler Carter Sturacci. And one of the most insane athletic feats by a Penn State athlete, his fourth NCAA title, absolutely insane. If you didn't get a chance or you weren't glued into wrestling, you absolutely missed out because this guy is a special, special competitor. Olympic trials coming up April 19th, 20th in State College. I will be there for sure to cover that. But I got a story at Carter, and I will just tell you that we knew it was going to be tough for him to get on the mat leading into NCAAs with that undisclosed knee injury. It's even a little bit crazier than we thought, right? There are more details. I spoke with Carter's dad within the past week. There's some details in there that you're like, man, this guy, not only did he do this on one leg, but you know, there's other layers to the story. So he is still planning on competing at the trials. There's going to be a massive Penn State contingent there in the BJC April 19th and 20th. So I'll have that out to you, but we will have a bunch of coverage leading up to Blue White of all the players, the storylines, what we want to see. Anything else I'm missing, John? Anything else on your mind?
No, you mentioned plugging anything I have. There'll be some stuff closer to the draft that I'll plug, you know, next week and whatnot after we're done talking Blue White. But for now, I'll have a Blue White preview up next week, kind of the things that I'm watching, the guys that I'm watching, what I think is going to happen, what the main things to look for here as spring ball wraps up. Outside of that, a lot of draft stuff, right? We're getting to that time of year too for me. Mm-hmm. Exciting time. Very, 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 very busy time. But either way, we found a way to, take some time here, record a podcast, get it out to you. Always happy to do that. Always happy to sit down and talk some spring ball, because like you said, it's going quick, right? Way quicker than I think I had anticipated. It's only a month. It's definitely shorter this year because it's finishing a week earlier.
Yeah.
And I think it's starting like half a week or no. Yeah. Starting the same time.
Starting the same time, but finishing a week earlier. And it's just been one of those like crazy springs where it feels like everything is condensed just because the other sports have been going on and all that kind of stuff. But for me, John, it's always the telltale sign of like the school year and everything's winding down. When I came back after Easter weekend, I was out of town, came back. There were people already lining up, taking graduation photos in front of the stadium. It's that time of year. I mean, it's graduation weekend's like a month away. So like it's kind of everything's winding down, but it wouldn't feel like it because we did have what I found out today, 4.09 inches of rain this week in College, which hopefully it dries up for those hoping to tailgate next week. Hopefully it dries up pretty quickly. And hopefully it's a sunny forecast leading into Blue White for all of the tailgaters and those who are looking forward to digging deep in the roster like the rest of us. But we will be back next week to get into that and more. And thank you for listening. You have more to say? John's got, he's got something to share.
I do not want to have this graduation discussion because I will get too angry at all the traffic that it will cause that weekend.
It's one weekend. Deal with it, John. It's one worst. Weekend.
Yeah, until there's like two people driving the wrong way up of College Ave. That happens every move-in single weekend year.
Too. Yeah.
I know. It drives me just... whatever. Like
you said, maybe. Well, no. I say maybe what we should do is just post up at an establishment along one of those streets, and then watch all the people. Then we're going to be busy. Yeah,
we're going to be putting ourselves in harm's way too because they're going the wrong way up the street.
Look both ways. Yeah.
Yes. But no, I think you're right. This is a good place to leave it. Like I said earlier, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Those 5-star ratings really help us out. Hit the subscribe button down below if you're watching on YouTube. Hit that thumbs up button. Read Audrey at The Athletic. Find her on Twitter at @OddSnyder4. Read me at the Center Daily Times. Find me on Twitter at @JohnSauber. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great day.